over to the second tonight's speakers, who is Dan.
Thanks, Gareth.
Yeah, my name's Dan O'Lan, a drug addict.
Hey, Dan.
Where's Chris? I've already forgotten where he is. Thank you very much for asking me to do this. It's a real pleasure. It doesn't happen very often, but whenever someone puts a microphone in front of me, I just... God, I want to misbehave so much. It's ridiculous. Anyway, I'll try not to. So, it's nice to be here. It's nice to look out into a large room full of liars, cheats, selfish, self-centered perverts, which is why I feel at home. So I'm in the right place. No, I'm in the right place because I'm a drug addict, and I think it helped me tremendously to understand what that meant. I thought it was because, you know, I was like, loved heroin, and loved crack, and loved whatever drug that, there was one day, well, it wasn't a day, it was about 2 hours, I loved amyl nitrate, and I don't know if anyone's ever got properly stoned on amyl nitrate. It's absolutely terrible. I'm trying not to say shit, but there you go. It was all there was. It was in America, and I nicked this bottle and ran off to the woods, and I thought, this was amazing. And I cried when it was finished. Anyway, but I hope that only happened once. There's usually more choice than that. Anyway, so yeah, I'm a drug addict. So, bless you. Come on, let's have some fun. Anyway, so what does that mean? It means I've got an illness called addiction. And that's vital, and like any illness, it needs to have a defect. It needs to have symptoms, and that are aligned to a defect, which you would then find in an organ. Essentially, is a definition of a disease or an illness. And I've got this illness of addiction, and some stories. I was driving along. It's not my car. It's my mum's car. Driving on my mum's car, this is probably about some point in 1999, and I hadn't used heroin for a year, 9 months to a year, something like that, and so I'm being good. And for me, being good is, I didn't have much money, so I'm, you know, trying to get by on scoring a couple of grams of coke a week. So basically, I've got the money, and I'm living in my parents' house, of course, again. And thank God for my mum and dad, I'd seriously be dead without them. I can't... I've ruined their lives, you know what I mean? Ugh. Anyway, so I'm driving along, I'm driving from Richmond to Clapham High Street, which isn't that far, and I'm driving like James Hunt, right? I'm going through red lights, and I don't care, and I'm going as fast, and I'm a pretty good driver, so we're talking fast, right? It's a Renault 5, lovely car to throw about. And anyway, so who else was there? No, it was just me. So you're with me. That's who was there. This big car, or you're very small people. Anyway, so, I pull up into the little side street. I throw the car into a parking space, and I run up to this guy's front door, and then I stop. And I sort of take a breath, and I ring on the bell, and I try and act as casually as I possibly can. So I can see his feet coming down the stairs, ding, 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 and he opens the door, and I just go, hi, you're in, hi. You know, and I do this every week, and I think I'm like a genius or whatever. And so we go up to his flat, and his room, whatever, and, you know, I sort of look around and go, oh, wow, you've got that new CD? Oh, yeah, I'm trying to be, you know, smooth. And I'm trying to pretend that I'm not so... God, it's hard not swearing. So desperate. And then I say, have you got a gram? The guy's a cocaine dealer. Of course, that's what he does for a living. That's why I'm there. And I'm trying to act as though it's just like, yeah, whatever. And so he goes, yeah, Dan, of course, yeah, I'm a cocaine dealer. I've got lots of grams of coke. And so I buy one or two or whatever I can afford. And then I sort of do this thing where I go, okay, great, thanks. Do you mind if I do one here? I mean, God, doesn't care. So I do a line, and something happens to me that is pretty much miraculous. You know, I get this. Oh God, that's so much better. And I'm able to we're able to talk shit for a few minutes. And as I'm getting up to leave, I go, do you mind if I do another one? So I do another one, get in the car, I drive up Clapham High Street, and I do this little left and a little right into this very quiet side street that I know very, very well, and I'm leaning over into the passenger seat doing a third one, and then I remember that that's not what I was going to do this week. Right? I was not going to do... I mean, I've got 200 yards and I've already done half of it. This is like supposed to be my little ticket to have a really good night in Shoreditch in this pub called The Conqueror, where there's a lock-in and you come out at 7 o'clock in the morning and you can't see, right? That I've done... This is I was supposed to have just a little taste, right? But I've had that little taste and it's turning to, like, seriously, about half a gram's already gone. And I'm leaning over this third line, I'm going, oh, no. I've done it again. I said that last week as well. And then I realised that all the thoughts that I'm telling myself, I had them last week, and the week before, and the week before, and the week before, and the week before. And it's only when I've done it that I didn't mean to do this. This isn't what I set out to do. I didn't set out to get high in a Renault 5 parked in a side street in Clapham. My goal was to sort of like be cool, think I'm some sort of teenage Hollywood millionaire, like hip hop forever. You know, that's what I thought. I was going to get really slick with this, not sort of like be paranoid out of my mind. I can't actually drive now. I'm so... Nah. Okay, so I'm telling you that story because in that is a lot. Okay, the illness I suffer from has, you know, you can argue that, oh God, it's so difficult not to swear. You can argue the whatever about it. I'm a fan of threefold illness, myself. The first bit I have is this weird, peculiar twist in my thinking. That running along, and I'm quite smart, I'm not boasting, but I think I'm really smart. But that means I'm not. That means I'm quite smart, okay? You know, I've got a first-class degree. I can read books with long words and all that sort of stuff. I can talk, blah, blah, work, job. You know, I'm not, like, mental or anything, you know? But running alongside my ability to sort of work out a logical path through the universe is an insane idea that actually I'm just going to use a little bit. That this time it will be different. I'm just going to have a sneaky peek, right? And there's this peculiar twist to my thinking. Some people call it mental obsession, whatever. It stops me being able to see true from false. And hopefully I'll get a few more stories out that explain the number of times that has happened to me where I've gone and used, and I am telling myself that what I'm about to do, it's going to be fine. It's going to be great. It's not going to be like it always has been. It's going to be different this time. And even if the thoughts do sort of go, you know, the last time you did this, you got really destroyed and it was really messy and it was really bad and your girlfriend sacked you and then. But if those thoughts sort of crowd into my mind, I just push them away. Like they don't actually count. They're not real memories or whatever, delusion. It's like... Look, I'm not a brain scientist, but you know, so I'm going to make some of this up. But like, memories are stored in the back of your head. I don't know if that's true, but for the sake of this story, they're stored in the back of your head, okay, in a filing cabinet. And if you need a memory, then you just go and get it, and you've got to pull it out, and then you look at it and go, oh yeah, okay, so I remember that, yeah. And some of those memories I've got, they are big, like cannonball memories. They're heavy. I'll probably never forget them. I've done, you know, whatever, great stuff, bad stuff, but the big stuff, right? Not what the colour of the kitchen curtains of my mum's house in 1970, I don't know what they were, yellow, purple flowers or something like that. But you know what I mean, like the big stuff. Like, for example, when I use heroin, I can't stop until stopping stops me. That's a big deal, right? But when I'm in active addiction, and this peculiar twist of my thinking is operative, that memory comes out of the back of my head as a cannonball, but by the time it gets into this part of my head, my mind, where I make a decision, it's like a ping pong ball bouncing off the side of a battleship. It's ding plop, ding plop. I don't know what's that. Whatever. And I keep going. Now, when I put a drug into my body, it doesn't really matter what it is, unless I really, 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 really don't like it, and there aren't many of those. Physical phenomenon of craving takes place, right? It is physical. It's like in my, it's not my mind, it's in my brain. I've sort of thing on YouTube recently, this really great doctor talking about why that is, and they basically nailed it now. And so it's physical, right? And so I put a drug into my body, and it just, this thing takes over, right? And it's like that I think I'm making a choice to have another one, and another one, another one, another one, another one, another one, another one, ATM, another one, another one, another one, another one. I think I'm making choices to do that, right? This is behavior, so that must be about choices. No. So this physical stuff takes over, and I'm like the puppet at the end of the string, right? And there's this really, really nasty hand that's going like, you're going to go over here now, and you're going to do this, and you're going to make a complete asshole out of yourself. You're going to steal money off your mum. No, you're going to go over here, and you're going to beg your, like, the people you work with for like 2 quid, so you can buy another E off the guy in the pub or whatever. I mean, you're just going to, is that crack in that piss? Oh, go and get it. Go and get the crack that's in the piss, right? You know what I mean? Whatever, like, just insane behaviour stuff that I do. And that's physical. My body is running the show, and I can't do anything about it. And for years, I don't know what I thought. I mean, I just did it. And if there are any, I ended up in front of a couple of psychiatrists, and a therapist, and a doctor, and I'd talk about this stuff, and I'd ask them, why do I do this? And they couldn't really give me much of an answer. They did their best. I'm not going to be rude about them. And some of them were really good, actually. And it wasn't until I came to a meeting and started listening to people with experience and reading literature that I began to sort of like get this picture drawn out for me that was describing me. And I remember when I sort of like kind of got it and accepted it, it was like, oh my God, that explains so much about me. That explains so, I mean, like the first one gets the ball rolling. So if I use 100 times in a day, not ever did, but you know what I mean. The first one opens the door, and the other 99 of my body going, more, do some 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 more, and on and on and on. And that fits me, right? Because if it's not that, and it is about behaviour, and it is about choice, and therefore it's not a disease, then I get very, very lost, right? And this is kind of like a thought experiment. So let's say Ian is an insane drug addict, just for an example, right? And he hasn't used any heroin for a couple of weeks, and I turn up, I've got a bag of gear, and I go, hey, look at this. And he's kind of like, doesn't have a program, and he's like, oh, goody. And then I say, you can have that. And he's like, wow, fantastic. And then I pull out a gun and I say, if you touch it, I'll shoot you in the head. He will not touch it unless he's really crazy. If he's anything like me, he'll think, maybe there aren't any bullets in the gun. Maybe I can dodge the first one. Okay? And so what some people will say is that what Ian is just doing is exhibiting choice. Because he's saying, I'm not going to touch the drugs because you're going to shoot me. And if it's choice, it's behaviour, it's not illness. But what Ian is powerless, and what I am powerless over, is not so much that, it's the desire. You still want that bag, don't you? Because I do, right? Do you know what I mean? I've got to have it. Sometimes I've been able to delay it for a little while. But when it's on me, oh God, I have to have it. It's the most important thing in the world. Very early on in my using, I experienced, it's passed through to knowledge as I've read the books and spoken to my sponsors and whatever. I've talked to people who've been around a while and done the 12 steps. I forgot what I was going to say. Christ, what was I talking about? Brains, Oh yeah, early on my using. Right, okay. Yeah. Wow, that is brilliant. So, early on my using, I could sort of see this happening. And there was occasions, like when I started out, I was into puff in a big way. And I really enjoyed getting high. But after like the third joint or whatever,
I'm sort of noticing that the only thing that I am getting off on is breathing in, right? I couldn't get any more stoned. I mean, I was like 16 and like completely... But I can't stop doing that. So that's the physical side of this. And the mental obsession. And the thing is, in my I got clean a lot in my using, right? When the consequences, when the girlfriend was going to sack me, when I get arrested, when I'm in court, when I'm whatever, for a very short period of time, I can put it down. For me, usually a week is the longest that's going to be. I think I've probably got up to about 3 weeks once or twice. But then there was some serious outside forces kind of ensuring that that happened. And the thing is, like, I get clean and now I don't really... It's not good news for me, right? At all. And I can't stop myself going doing it again. And so in the brain, mind, whatever, in our psyche, there's this kind of hierarchy, if you like. There's this sort of thing, right, which is sort of like part of the brain that we got given by the apes and they got off the dinosaurs or whatever. I'm not a doctor. But you know what I mean? It's kind of pretty much a fact. You know, your brain is an inherited thing. You can see it in dogs and apes and any creatures, whatever. Anyway, all of us animals, we're actually animals, share this kind of hierarchy, right? And it is about food, it's about sex, and it's about fighting, essentially, or survival. So, kind of like as you walk around, you know, the back of your animal brain is sort of going, can I eat that? Can I have sex with that? Am I going to have to kill it? Right? That's basically what it... When you look at a dog, that's what they do. They're just sniffing around going, eat, fuck, kill. I'm sorry. I may not be the only one who thinks like that. I don't know. I can see one or two of you do. Drugs are more important than any of that. Right? The basics of survival do not count when I'm using drugs. Right? At all. Right? I don't eat. Sex, goodbye. I mean, you know... Just the heroin especially, just like poof. I'd even see it. It's almost like going out the window. Like, oh God, there it goes. And you know, I just survival. So heroin is survival. Come on, right? So that's what drugs mean to me. That happened to me quite early on. That they became amazingly important, and they were the best things I ever found. And I know that without you lot, that's going to be true for me again. I'll be 13 years clean in November. God willing. And thank God. No, really, thank God, because no one else is going to do it. It's my experience. I'll get onto that bit in a minute. You can quietly leave the room when I start talking about God. It's all about God, by the way. It's just, no, sorry. Higher power. Make it easier. It is. Jesus. Sorry. I'm not a Christian. So that's what makes me a drug addict, right? So I stopped using drugs. I'm sorry, this is a bit all over the place. I stopped using drugs for a week, 3 weeks, a day, 10 minutes, whatever. And I get really bored very, very quickly. I wake up, and there's... When you wake up as a human being, you've got like about half a second before your consciousness kicks in, right? There's this, your body wakes up first, and then your mind kind of gets dragged into play, right? And that's about, that half a second is as good as it gets for me when I'm not using drugs, right? Like, I'm not using my mind, so I am fine, right? But as soon as I sort of like, oh, I'm awake, it's like there's somebody standing by the side of my bed with a spade, right, made of depression, and they just smack me in the head with it, and I'm like, boom! And I just wake up, and I just think, oh, and I just, oh God, life is so hard. I feel so, oh, self-pity. Oh God, I know what that's like, right? And I'm just a moron, and I don't know what to do. And I can't use drugs, and I... Yeah, somebody knows exactly what I was about to say. Oh my God. Yeah, I said I wouldn't talk about that. Anyway, So I play with myself, and I eat too much food, and I watch too much TV, and I drive the car too fast, and I swear too much, and I spit too much, and I sort of walk around thinking I'm some sort of G. And this is all in Waitrose in Richmond. You know? I think I'm a really bad dude, right? Like, I'm sort of straight out of Compton. I'm not. I was born in Hampstead. I mean,
I
So I have this spiritual malady, right, that I just don't sit easy in the world. And the thing about it is, every time I stop using, I connect to this horrible feeling that I remember when I was a kid, that I thought was going to go away when I got older, when I started having sex, when I started driving cars, when I started having money, when I started doing what I wanted to do. I thought it would go away. It didn't, it got worse. And by the time I'm in my mid-30s, it is eating my lunch, right? I mean, seriously, I want to kill myself, and I just can't stand my life without drugs, right? And as soon as I start using again, it just gets even worse, right? Well, actually, no, I think on average, I'm probably better off using drugs, probably, in that back then. I was happier. I didn't feel so spooked and guilty and ashamed and frightened. And that's what life without drugs is like for me. I feel guilty. I feel ashamed. I don't know why. And I could pay thousands of pounds to a psychiatrist, and I did. I was in treatment for 7 months, and we chased every theory under the sun, and over the hills and far away. And anyway, so yeah, love drugs, best thing in the world, fantastic, great. And it's weird, you know, I still love drugs, and I hope I never use again. And I like paradoxes like that. Okay, so I'm rolling along. Drugs. So I stopped using heroin for a year, and I got my ducks in a row. I got a nice job teaching in an art school. I got a really interesting, beautiful, sexy girlfriend. Sex was fantastic. I was allowed to drive a car. Wow. So I kind of got the holy trinity going down, right? I've got money, a job. I've got a girl. I've got a car. What else do you need? You want to take place in life, that's what you need. A credit card, mobile phone, I'm good to go. And it's true, right? You know, love my phone, love my credit card. Anyway. I woke up one morning, and I'm in a friend of mine's flat, and I've got some friends staying from Scotland. Sorry, Scotland. I can hear the foil rattling next door. And I'm like, no, no, no. I haven't touched it for a year. No, 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 no. So, we've got to go because we've got the car out, so we're going to go. And they're like, oh, you're going to leave a few minutes. And I'm like, I can hear this foil. And I'm like, no, 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 no. So I go down to the van, wait in the van because that's safe. Get away from the drugs, sit in the van, no, no, no. And they get in the van, and I'm just sort of, I'm bored, I'm irritable. You know, I've got the ants in my pants. So can I have a bit of and that was it. I didn't like it particularly. It was very strong. I was like, that was too much. And but the light had come on again, and I look back at that, and it really, I had everything. I had a lot more then than I've got today in many respects, right? But it ain't enough for me. It's not enough. The outside world doesn't keep me clean. And then that was 99, some point in 99, and I sort of crashed into earth about, it was November the 6th, 2001 was the last day I used. And I got driven to a treatment centre by my parents down in Devon, which is really far away from London, by the way. And it's green, and there's cows, and it rains. And I spent 7 months in a treatment centre, I was crazy, right? I thought this was going to be like sort of Austrian psychiatrists, horse riding, clay pigeon shooting, whatever, three-course meals. And it wasn't. It was like basically butlins for junkies is what it really was. And I'm very, very grateful for the place. I know it sounds a bit rude. I don't mean to be rude, but there were a lot of people there who were trying to sleep with vulnerable humans and use drugs, and that's just the staff. Right? Yeah. Sorry, I can't do anything properly. It was great. It saved my life, seriously. I could not stop using. I desperately did not want to go to a treatment centre. For me, that was step one. It was utter failure as a human being. Dan, you're going to go and live in a mental hospital for drug addicts. That is just, to me, I wanted to go to the day program when I was caught. I got interviewed, they accepted me, and they said, right, you can start when you get clean. And for about 3 months every day, I woke up, go at 9 o'clock, okay, don't use today. What are you going to do? Go back to sleep. Wake up. It's 11, wake up. What are you going to do? Going drugs, bang, gone. Every day was like that. I desperately didn't want to do it. At the end of my using, I used to go and score up in Kensal Green of a guy called T, who had a Punto. And I don't know why they drive Puntos. And I used to sit on this bench, see his Punto, with a 20 quid, or if I was doing well, I'd go for 2-1. And I'd get in the back, right, T, how's it going? Yeah, la la, bing, here's the money. Bing, blah, blah. Straight across the road to this big Irish pub, downstairs into the basement, and into the toilet. And it was an old Victorian, but these toilets were amazing. I mean, they were like 10 foot tall, doors 2 inches thick. No one's coming. I felt so safe in that place. And I'd get in there, I'd get one in me, and it takes about 5 minutes. And I felt like a king. Even on the last day of my using, I felt like a king. But shortly before I stopped using, I suddenly could see reality. If I feel like a king for 5 minutes, and I'm the kind of person that only likes going very, very high, or like the middle bit of life, forget that, I don't know what that is, but all down to the gutter. So my 5 minutes, feeling like a king, that's 23 hours and 55 minutes of total depression, shit, misery, boredom, frustration, hatred of myself, okay? That's not a very good deal. That's not what it was like when I started using. When I started using, it was great. And at the end, it was just, this is, I can't stop. I desperately want to. I don't want to have to go and do what I'm going to do, and I couldn't. So I woke up in a treatment centre, stayed there for 7 months, and some very interesting things happened to me. I got to 31 days clean. I know it's 31 days clean because the day before I had been to a meeting and I picked up an orange key ring. And day 31, I woke up feeling great, and I was walking around the treatment centre with this orange key ring, trying to impress people. Like girls, like, orange, eh? Gee whiz. What a life. Oh, yeah. About lunchtime, it just seemed to fall out of the sky. It was on me. I'd never been 31 days clean. And I wanted to use. God, I wanted to use. And I was in this treatment centre, and I figured it'd been there for 20 years. I don't know how many hundreds, thousands of drug addicts have been through there. Common sense tells me there must be a little bag of heroin that someone smuggled in and hidden somewhere and being launched before they can get it. So it must still be here. Yes? Makes sense, right? What doesn't make any sense is you spend all day looking for it, right? Under bushes, behind drain pipes and cupboards, under people's beds, knocking on someone's door. Can I look under your bed? What for? I don't know. There might be a bag of heroin under there. You're crazy. And I just, like, it was tearing away at the inside of my skull. And I just thought, what am I doing? This is insane. Let's go. Let's just leave. And I walked up to the gate and I just thought, because I really, really didn't like being in a treatment centre. It was really, you know, boring. You know, we're not making art, talking about philosophy. We're reading this weird book and we can't watch telly. And, you know, it's like, whatever. I hated being in there. And I desperately wanted to leave. And I got to the gate and I just thought, wait a minute. Something happened to me. I was beginning to be restored to sanity. And what happened was I could see myself coming. And what I was about to do is leave, go and get a drink, go and use, get some heroin, then come back and beg, knock on the door and beg them to let me in. That's insane, right? And I thought, oh my God, yeah, I know that's exactly what's going to happen. That's exactly what I'm about to do. So I was scared. I don't want to be rude. I couldn't really see much point in talking to anybody at all. And I don't know what counsellor's going to do for me when I'm in that place, personally speaking. But I went and did something else. I went upstairs to the toilet. I still remember the colour of the floor because I got very close to it and I prayed. I didn't believe in God, so I basically said a prayer to a dead friend of mine, a guy called Sean, who, by the way, would have absolutely loved recovery. He would have loved this, but he died, unfortunately. I loved him. And I said, buddy, if you're up there, please help me. Bang! Straight away. I didn't know this at the time. I didn't see it. I didn't go, whoa. But my obsession to use was removed from me there and then, right? What happened next was I went downstairs to take the piss out of somebody, drink far too much horrible coffee and smoke too many roll-ups and see if I can get up to no good or whatever. Just like me. I was back. but the obsession was removed. And that was, it's never returned. And I kind of found some weird comfort in getting on my knees at the end of the day going, hey, whatever, Sean, Dad, whatever, thanks. And I've pretty much done that every day that I've been clean since. There's some, it's not a coincidence that when I start praying, I start asking for help, I get it. I haven't got a Mercedes yet, must be said. Whatever, all the things I really want that probably aren't very good for me. But I've got everything I've needed. And I don't know, how long have I got?
Seven minutes,
okay. Right, okay, so let's get to the good bit. I leave the treatment centre. I think I walk out of the treatment centre after doing 7 months. It's great, thank you very much, councillors. Goodbye, everybody else. La la la. Walk down the road. I've got about 50 feet. And I'm feeling pretty good. And I'm wondering what I'm going to do now. And I'm in Plymouth. And I think, well, obviously I should become mayor because these idiots all vote for me. Wait a minute, that's actually a really good idea. And then suddenly, out of nowhere comes this guilt, shame. I feel like a freak. I'm the freak of the week again. I've won the prize for being just... I could almost put my hand down my throat and pull out this kind of thing that's in me that just eats... It's a spiritual malady. It's a void. It's an emptiness. It's just so destroying. I use drugs to try to get rid of that. It worked very well for quite a while. And then it stopped working. And then that thing got even bigger. And the more I used, the less it did, and the more I needed to use. And it just... Anyway, so right there and then I made a decision. I'd seen a couple of people in the rooms. I've been to a few meetings, not many, must be said. But I thought, well, I'm going to the Monday night meeting in Plymouth and I'm going to ask that guy to sponsor me. The reason I asked him is that he listened to him share. He was there every week. He'd smoke crack in the same crack house that I did. It's called Lollipops up in Soho. It was weird. That was it. He had a bullet hole and a knife wound, and I thought that was good. And he would protect me because he's hard, he was Scottish, and he's a jewel thief or something, whatever, I don't know. So I went around to see him, and we spoke, and he was convinced that I'd done, you know, I was willing to admit that I had no power whatsoever. You know, in and of myself, I'm nothing. I can concede deep down to that, as deep as I can go. And I started to pray, I started to believe that power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. And he said, oh, okay, you're Scottish. He said, like, step three. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I can come back tomorrow, we'll do that. Yeah, it's great. And he went, no. Now or not at all. And I was like, oh. And so we got out this funny old book and we read from it. And I was like, okay, yeah. And it was just embarrassing, frankly. It was just weird. But I did it. I was scared not to, really, is what it was. I don't want to go back there. And I know I'm going to, unless I do something. Unless something really changes in me, I'm going to use again. And so we did the third step. He gave me a bit of paper and he said, just start writing a list of names of people you really, really, really don't like very much. You know, the kind of people you think of, you go, oh, and you have a fancy about killing them and getting a round of applause for killing them in public. So that was easy. Anyway, so I worked through the steps. I'm not going to go through them. That's a bit boring, isn't it, really? But the result of working through the steps is I've been freed from a whole load of stuff. Sometimes I'm freed from the bondage itself. Sometimes I the things that I really don't like about myself, the things that obstruct knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out, it gets taken away. It comes back really quick, but it does get taken away. I believe in the steps. I don't know what else to tell you. The spiritual experience that's promised in step 12, it absolutely has come true. I didn't take long to work the steps. For me, I needed that evidence. I needed that stuff. I needed to be equipped sooner rather than later. I've changed sponsors a few times. Some have relapsed. Some have gone mad. I got spotted from America because it's cool. But it's expensive to phone him up. But he's great. I love him. Chris, he's. I do a lot of service. a lot. I do a lot of service. And I love the fellowship. And after this, I'm going to go and find my buddies down in Waterloo, and we're going to eat kebabs. And I do that every Friday. And I love it. It's the highlight of my week. Right? I'm a busy man, I'm an artist, and there's a lot of things going on Friday. You know, there's some really sexy, intelligent people I can be mucking about with. And I always say no. I'm at my home group every Friday, except tonight, because Chris asked me, so I love him. Thanks. I haven't finished yet. How long have I got? Two minutes? No? Finish. I've been told I'm going to finish. Okay, so but basically, it's about working the steps, right? That's where the miracle is, and that finding the power inside this program. I mean, my God, it's revolutionary. It has just transformed me. I am a selfish, self-centered, arrogant, dishonest, lazy fool. Right? I really know how to destroy my life. I've done it twice. Okay? But with this program, as long as I'm willing to practice the spiritual principles that I found within it, stay kind of spiritually obedient, you know, be honest with my dudes, my sponsor, and my some good friends, and tell them really, you know, I've just finished working the steps recently, and I had to sit down opposite somebody, a friend of mine, you know, he's about the same kind of cleaner, and I had to tell him stuff that I was, before I got around, I was going, no, God, no, I can't say that, yeah, Chris, la 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 la. Okay, yeah, I found total freedom. Thanks a lot.